Great. Well, I'd like to welcome everyone tonight to our Energy Kinesiology call. And we have a very special guest, Deborah Green, who's a PhD and energy kinesiologist. And I've really enjoyed the talk that you gave, Deborah, at the conference in D.C. on,
well, thank you.
On endless energy. Your book is just incredible. One of the best books, I must say, that I've read on energy medicine. I love how clearly you are able to articulate these concepts that a lot of people just can't get their head around, and you just make it really easy to understand and digest. So that's one of the gifts I see you have.
Well, thank you so much, John. That's great to hear, because that was really one of my motivations in writing it, was, you know, to make the information a lot more accessible. So thank you. That means a lot to me.
Yeah, it really is. It's so accessible. I loved it. And I guess it comes from your background as being, you got your PhD, I believe, in communication and semantic studies.
Right.
Put the two together.
From beautiful Ohio State University. And, it's a very potent degree to have, because it kind of ties together how our body-mind system communicates within itself and how we can communicate with it. So that's what I was studying, and it's my passion.
Yes. So you really have a deep grasp of, like, quantum physics and the understandings of science, but you also are trained as an energy kinesiologist, and I know you studied transformational kinesiology, and I believe also taught it with Rolf and Greta from Denmark.
Yep.
I love those two people. They're really great. So,
So
I'd like to just jump right into the book. First, if anybody hasn't gotten the book yet, I know, Deborah, you said you have the book available at a special discount.
It's true.
So tell us how we can get that.
Yes, if you just go to my website, energyhealthy.com, and click on the Purchase the Book link and type in the promo code Energy Health, you will receive over 20% discount on the book. And the book is, you know, only $18.95 to begin with, so it ends up being like $14-something. And it's discounted for the holidays through the end of December.
Great. So if you haven't read it or got it, get that book, because it is just tremendous. So let's just dive right into some of the things about the book. One of the things I really liked was you talked about there's about 40% of the energy that we have that isn't explained by conventional science, and it's not attributed to any biological function. Can you talk about that 40%?
Sure, yes. This was actually the result of some pretty revolutionary research that was done by A.V. Hill, who is, or I should say was, he's, you know, since passed, but he was a Nobel Prize-winning biophysicist, and he was doing some research into the energy that's necessary to fire a muscle. And, you know, this is kind of an important factor, like what powers us, you know, what makes us able to move. And when he was researching this, I mean, most of us probably have heard that the energy necessary to fire a muscle comes from this biochemical interaction between ATP and your cell's mitochondria. That's what we, you know, are taught in any kind of basic biology class, and it's also, you know, taught in medical schools across the country and so forth. And when A.V. Hill started looking into that, he was pretty shocked to discover that, you know, only about 60% of the energy necessary to fire a muscle comes from, you know, physical, biological functioning. And then there was this other 40% that he referred to as the unexplained energy. And, you know, Hill thought that he'd kind of made a mistake, and he kept repeating his research and coming up with the same thing. And, you know, the good news is that A.V. Hill discovered the vital body, or the energy body, or the etheric body, whatever you want to call it. You know, he basically discovered that there's much more to us than just our physicality, that we also have this energy component to us, and it's the vital body, which is comprised of, you know, our chakra system and our meridian system, and, you know, the meridians in turn feeding into these tiny little energy capillaries called nadis. And so that whole system from, you know, the 7 major chakras, the 21 minor chakras, the 49 little mini ones, and the major meridians, and of which there are several, well, actually 14 majors and then several hundred minor meridians feeding into the nadis, and that whole system comprises our vital body, and that is the unexplained energy.
Oh, great. So that's where we in kinesiology tie into. It's the vital body, basically, and all that energy that we're working with when we're balancing meridians and chakras and all that.
Exactly, and even in the most simple act as a muscle test, because in order for a muscle to fire, it requires a bioelectrical, chemical, energetic impulse. And so whenever we do muscle testing, we are tapping into that whole continuum, including the energy aspect of it.
Wow, that's great. I never thought of it that way, but that's why I love your book so much. It really helps explain what we've been doing all along. So this is great. I'm excited.
Cool.
So tell us, I know you talk about 4 energy bodies, so we so far talked about the vital. Just give us a brief overview of the 4 bodies, and then we'll come back into each one in more depth.
Okay, cool. Well, so the vital body is, you know, one of the lower frequency bodies. It interfaces with the dense physical, and this is an energy continuum, right? And so then the next higher, you know, octave or the next higher frequency band on this energy spectrum is the emotional. And then if we go up from there, you know, the next higher frequency band is the mental body, and then the highest frequency band is the universal body. And so that, you know, comprises our energy constitution.
So they're basically frequencies. We go
yes.
Vital. And you talk about the vital being kind of interfaced with the physical, or they're two sides of the same coin.
Yes, and that's a very important concept. You know, the energy, the basic energy domains are the vital physical, and then the emotional, and then the mental, and then the universal. And, you know, the vital physical is really considered to be like one energy domain or one energy body. But I had to kind of separate out that vital body and talk about it as a distinct, you know, entity, even though it's not, you know, in order for us to understand it a little better. But yes, the vital body and the physical body are so intertwined that we have to understand them together as two sides of the same coin. Because, you know, if you separate the vital body from the physical, basically you have a corpse, you have a dead body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as kinesiologists, we work with living people. So we're working with people who have their vital body intact, and it interfaces, it's woven into the dense physical. And the vital body is what powers us and animates us, and, you know, it's our power supply. So it's a very, very important, you know, component of our constitution. And as an interface, it has some special qualities to it. I don't know if you know, want me to go into more detail about that or not.
Sure.
But it's sure. The vital body is unique and kind of distinct from the other energy bodies because it is an interface. And it interfaces with the dense physical, and it also interfaces with the higher frequency bodies, the emotional, mental, and universal. And because of this interface effect, the vital body plays a very important role as a gateway to our other bodies. And so when you're working at the vital body level, you can, you know, really have access to, you know, all the bodies from that level, which is why, you know, as energy kinesiologists, by doing our energy testing or muscle testing, you know, we're able to sort of tap into these other levels and, you know, ask questions, get answers, and, you know, balance the energies and so forth. And it's because of this interface effect. And the vital body also acts as a blueprint for the dense physical body. So that sometimes is a little difficult concept for people to get their heads around, but you know, the physical body basically represents the after effects. The vital body is where the action is in terms of what's going on with the person physically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you have energy imbalances at the vital level, if they're not corrected, eventually they are going to play out into the dense physical realm, because the vital body is the blueprint. It's the precursor to what goes on in the dense physical.
I remember.
So that's another very, very important piece about the vital body.
I remember Deepak Chopra once talking about that, how, like, if you want to look at where the physical body is going to be in 6 months, look at the vital body. And then if you want to say, you know, where the physical body is now, you'd look at where the vital body's been the last 6 months. And like you say, it's kind of a printout.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I would even add on to that, and I would say, and if you want to know where the vital body is, then you need to look at the emotional body and see where that is. And if you want to know about the emotional body, then you need to go to the mental. And if you want to know about the mental, then you got to go to the universal, because it's a continuum. And you know, the next higher frequency body, to a certain extent, has control over the next lower frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So
you talked about the top-down approach. Is that kind of where it's opposed to our Western approach, which is the bottom up, and this really ties in with this whole concept. So talk a little more about that, like your top-down approach.
Yes, well, as you mentioned, in conventional Western medicine, the dense physical body is seen as, you know, kind of the be-all and end-all. So if you have a problem with your physical body, the attempt is to solve the problem at the dense physical level. And so you're, you know, usually prescribed, you know, a medication that alters your physical functioning, or a surgery that alters your physical functioning, or, you know, testing that looks into your physical functioning. So, you know, everything is dealt with on the physical level. If you have something going on emotionally, maybe you feel, you know, kind of depressed, or you have anxiety or panic attacks, well, you are given, usually prescribed, a medication that alters your physical functioning, your brain functioning,
mm-hmm.
so that you, you know, can address the emotional issue by, you know, looking, altering the physical. And on it goes. No matter what is wrong with you, it is always approached through the altering of the dense physical body. And that is a bottom-up approach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in energy health, and energy medicine, it's the opposite. If we want to really understand, you know, as we already talked about, want to understand what's going on the physical level, we have to go to the next higher, you know, frequency band, the vital body. If we want to understand how come the vital body is kind of, you know, chronically out of balance, then we need to look at what's going on in the emotional body. If the emotional body tends to have, you know, kind of a chronic situation, then we got to look at what's going on with the mental. And if there's some mental thing going on, we got to look at the universal body, because it does precipitate out, or kind of cascade down like that. The energy does.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get much, much closer to the root cause of, you know, symptoms by going to the next higher frequency body.
Great. So that really is like that metaphor you talked about, the lily pad, how the whole continuum, everything's connected. And so often in Western approaches, we just, again, just focus on the physical body and starting to recognize, yeah, there is a mind-body interaction here, but that's we're very primitive in our approach. But thanks to you and all these new systems, we're seeing, hey, it really does connect, and there's a system that you can actually use this with. So,
yeah, you know, the important thing about that, you know, the lily metaphor is to help people understand that the energy can take different forms, but it's still energy, you know? So it's like, you know, you can also think about water. You know, in terms of a metaphor for understanding our energy constitution, because, you know, we exist on these multiple planes of experience simultaneously. You know, I can experience things on the physical level, you know, oh, I'm hungry, you know, my stomach is growling. We can experience things on the emotional level. Well, how do I feel about being hungry? Well, I'm kind of, you know, angry that I'm hungry because I just ate. And then, you know, there's the whole mental aspect. Well, what do I think about being hungry? Well, you know, when I think about that, I realize that, you know, I look at my watch and, well, perhaps it is time for me to eat again. And then there's the whole universal aspect. So we occupy these multiple planes of existence simultaneously, and we have these energy bodies that are formed upon these planes. And it's all energy, but it's just energy taking different forms. And so with water, water does the same thing. You know, if you freeze it, it's rock solid ice, its essence is still water. If you heat it up a little bit, it liquefies, completely changes form, but its essence is still water. If you heat it up even more, it's, you know, boils and evaporates into steam, and it changes form drastically again, but its essence is still water. And eventually it evaporates into, you know, humidity. Air, and you can't, there's no trace of it, but it's still, its essence is still water. And so that's a nice metaphor for understanding us. You know, we occupy these different planes of existence, these different forms simultaneously, and it's still us.
Yes, and when you shift the energy, the physical body often responds and pain just goes away, which we think, oh, God, it's amazing and a miracle, but yet it's just, it got done and expressed in the physical, which is just, I think you called it crystallized energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the physical body. But
yes.
when you're again on that lily pad, you're affecting something, it can go down to the root. When you're working up top, it drops
mm-hmm.
down. So I like that, the top-down approach. Well, come back to the emotional body. You were talking about, this was a great concept, how we can have a overweight emotional body or a, you know, underweight emotional body or a just right emotional body. Can you kind of expound a little bit on that?
Sure. I kind of hesitated, you know, when in writing the book, it's like, gosh, should I really, you know, use this kind of metaphor? I mean, you know, for people who have weight issues, it's like, oh, it's kind of dicey. But, you know, it's been so helpful for me in my own life and the clients that I work with to understand the, you know, our emotional bodies in terms of these, again, this metaphor of being either underweight or overweight or, you know, a kind of healthy weight. And, you know, it's very rare to find a sort of healthy emotional body. Most of us, myself included, you know, tend to have either underweight or overweight emotional body because the emotional body is, it's really not very well understood. And if we tend a little bit towards, you know, the overweight condition, the emotional body will, you know, display itself as, you know, having, there'll be lots of drama, you know, in your life and inside yourself, you know, lots of emotional highs and lows and things going on emotionally. If you have a very underweight or emaciated emotional body, it will be, you know, your emotional experience will be very, I should say, kind of flatline, you know, like not much going on there. And the healthy emotional body is characterized by, you know, being aware of what's going on the emotional, you know, spectrum, but not, you know, getting too much into it. In other words, you see and experience and feel the emotions, but you don't take them on so much. It's also characterized by compassion and, you know, just being awake emotionally. And I'm sure all of us have had, you know, experiences with people who are either, you know, having an underweight or overweight kind of condition. And I'm sure if we think about ourselves, we realize, ooh, I've had periods in my life where I've certainly, you know, had one or the other. So I find it to be a really useful concept.
Yeah. Now, you talk about the four common drama addictions, self-pity, hopelessness, alienation, and guilt and shame. So when people are, like, stuck in those addictions, because I know times I've been with people or like even maybe in my my own past, I've had times where I'm stuck in self-pity or hopelessness, alienation or guilt and shame. What can we do to help people break free from those addictions?
Well, I think, first of all, just realizing that they are addictions can be really helpful. I mean, that's why I think the addiction model is pretty useful here, because a good part of overcoming the addiction is realizing that you have it in the first place, you know? So, if I could even back up a step further and say a very important part of overcoming these is realizing that you have an emotional body,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, most people don't tend to think in those terms, and it can be very helpful if you are aware that you have an emotional body, then you can pay attention to it and, you know, tune into your emotional body and see how is it doing, you know? Does it seem to be, you know, healthy? Does it seem to be, you know, taking on kind of a large, you know, disproportionate amount of your time and energy and so forth? Or, you know, is it sort of in balance? You know, these kinds of things. So even just being aware that you have an emotional body is a very good start. And then once you observe it for a while, you might notice that, you know, it's suffering from one or more of these addictions. And that awareness is good. And then you can, of course, with the awareness, you can make different choices. And instead of indulging, you know, in the addiction, or I also talk about some emotional body junk foods in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of indulging in them kind of mindlessly, you can actually, you know, put your emotional body on a diet and, you know, pay attention to, you know, what you're feeding your emotional body. I talk in the book about how feelings are food for the emotional body. So if your emotional body, you know, needs to go on a diet, then you can, you know, maybe keep a little journal. You know, if you're trying to lose weight physically, you know, it's very helpful to write down everything that you eat, because then you bring awareness to it and you can make different choices so that you're, you know, not just mindlessly eating, or you're not just eating, you know, to feel better or to fill some other kind of void. And the same thing with the emotional body. It's very helpful to write down, you know, what feelings are you feeding your emotional body? What kind of feelings do you tend to engage in?
Mm-hmm.
And keep a list of that for, you know, a few days, a week, you know, a couple of weeks, whatever, until you get a sense of what's going on with your emotional body. And then if you find that you are, in fact, feeding it a lot of self-pity or, you know, shame or guilt or whatever, you can make conscious choices to stop doing that.
I think that's an important distinction that you're bringing up, that we are not our emotions. I think most people think, oh, I'm afraid, I'm angry, I'm irritated, and then they get into that emotion and they just keep feeding it and feeding that whole thing. And you're saying, hey, step back and just be aware that I have this emotional body, and now what do I really want to feed it? So what would be some of the healthy foods to feed our emotional body in this case then?
I will answer that, but your what you said just reminded me of something. It's one of the unfortunate things about the English language is that we do tend to talk in these ways, like, I am hurt, you know, I am angry, instead of saying, you know, I mean, maybe even saying my emotional body is experiencing this, or at least to say I'm feeling this, as opposed to I am this. I mean, it's a very important distinction. And in the Hawaiian language, for example, you cannot say that. You cannot say I am, you know, mad or angry or sad. You cannot say that in the Hawaiian language, and I find that very fascinating.
It doesn't exist. That's why they're so mellow, the Hawaiians.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, some of the things that you can feed your emotional body instead of the, you know, the diet of the junk foods and the addictive foods are to feed it what I call sort of higher frequency feelings. And, you know, those are things like joy and compassion and delight and things like that. And, you know, one of the helpful pieces in understanding how these emotions are calibrated is, you know, the work of Dr. David Hawkins.
Mm-hmm. Power versus force.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great work. So how...
Also derived from kinesiology muscle testing, by the way.
Mm-hmm. So tell us some ways, like, for us kinesiologists, so we can work with the emotional body, some of the techniques that are in common, and possibly give us some suggestions of what we can do in our clinical work.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of energy kinesiologists, you know, work in the emotional realm. You know, they sort of go behind the scenes of what's displaying physically. They go behind the scenes to, you know, the emotional component or content of how, you know, something might be playing out. I think even, you know, you can do that through muscle testing just by asking, you know.
Yeah, find the emotion.
Mm-hmm, yep. And, I mean, along those lines, and, you know, I don't know how much you want to go into this, but one of the things that I have noticed is that kinesiologists tend not to do the same thing with the mental body. They don't tend to so much look into, you know, the mental body component. But I think looking at the emotions is a pretty common thing. Do you find that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then,
yeah,
like, some of the techniques, I'm not sure if it was in the emotional body, but you were talking about, like, kind of witnessing, or I think you talked about director mode on page 157.
Yeah, that's mental body.
Yeah, that's mental. So I like that. I want to get into that because I really found that tremendously helpful, just understanding that. And then some of the things, even with the systems, I think you called it, there were six different ways we can kind of use our internal senses. They were like attention, you know, just paying attention and like witnessing in a sense, and then intention. And then visualization. There was self-talk, self-sensing, and self-observation. Can you talk a little bit about those and how we use our internal senses to transform and move energy?
Sure. I mean, John, I just have to say I'm touched by how much you have digested the book.
Yeah.
I'm just really touched by that. That's really awesome.
Well, it's a great book. I just... Mm-hmm. You know, I love rereading it because it's just so rich. You know, just you want to keep coming back to it. So leftovers of the book are good food. You know, it's like pizza.
Well, thank you. So we want to talk a little bit about director's mode, and we want to talk a little bit about these internal senses. So let me talk first about director's mode. And it is a capacity of the mental body, and it's basically the ability that each of us has to observe the rest of our bodies, you know. I call it director's mode because, again, the metaphor that I use is it's the difference between being an actor involved in the drama on the stage versus being the director who's directing, you know, the action. And this is extremely helpful. This director's mode is very helpful, especially if you have a difficult situation in your life, you know, because we can either get pulled into the situation and into the drama where, you know, we're acting it out and we're just, you know, all in it, or we can take the director's perspective and be kind of observing what's going on here, observing ourselves and observing, you know, the other people who are, you know, involved in the situation. And you can really get a different perspective, you know, more of a kind of bird's eye view. And your horizons sort of broaden, you know. Your world becomes a little bigger when you're able to step back like that and witness or observe a situation instead of being pulled into it. So that's what I refer to as director's mode, you know, taking the director's chair. And you'll find that you have a lot more freedom of movement and speech and choices and all kinds of things open up when you are able to observe, you know, what's going on. Instead of just being in the drama.
Right, like the difference between being in the problem versus observing the problem.
Exactly, yep. And it does relate to, you know, what I call these internal senses. And, you know, we have these external senses, you know, sight, you know, seeing and hearing and touching and tasting and smelling. And those senses get talked about so much. And those senses basically orient us to the external environment. But in addition to those, you know, external senses, we have a whole array of internal senses that orient us to the internal world, you know, and or inner space, you know, what's going on inside of us. And these internal senses are very, very crucial to energy health, because it's these internal senses that guide us and orient us and connect us and give us, you know, access to what's going on inside us. And, you know, I mean, our energy is inside us. You know what I'm saying? It's not out there somewhere. It's inside. That's where the action is. So, yes, so, you know, the internal senses are attention, you know, what you choose to pay attention to. Attention is an internal sense. I mean, you are, each of us is constantly choosing what to pay attention to.
Yeah, and that's it. Focus.
Yeah. And that's an internal sense that we possess. And intention is another internal sense. And, you know, we have the choice not only to focus on whatever we choose to focus on, but we can get willful about it. You know, we can get intentional. We can bring in, you know, the power of our volition. And that has potency to it. It mobilizes energies. Will is actually a very, very potent, you know, energy mobilizer. And that's what's the ingredient of intention. You know, you get the will in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then visualization, you know, we all have the capacity to visualize or make pictures, you know, in our minds. And that's another very potent factor that influences our energy health. You know, what kind of pictures are you making in your mind? Are they happy pictures? Are they sad or disturbing pictures or whatever? It impacts our energy health, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You can try that just, you know, for a moment and picture something, you know, happy and uplifting and notice how you feel, you know, and what your energy does, and then picture something that's kind of sad or disturbing and notice the impact of that on your energy level.
Of course, it
immediately, you know, has an impact. So if you know, if we're in the habit of making these kind of, you know, difficult and challenging pictures in our head, well, guess what? And there's something that you can do about that, you know, even just being aware of it and its impact. And then we all have the capacity to talk to ourselves. And that self-talk is another channel of, you know, our internal orientation. It's another internal sense. And again, has the same kind of impact. Are you saying nice things to yourself, or are you saying not nice things? You know, most of us are very nice to other people, but we're, you know, sometimes not very nice to ourselves in the way that we talk to ourselves. It's an important factor that affects our energy health. Self-sensing is the capacity to actually sense what is going on inside your body-mind system. And, you know, I mean, there are people who have honed their self-sensing capacity to the extent that they can sense into their individual organs, you know, like, oh, what's my liver doing right now? Let me sense into that. And, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can do if you really just focus your attention and intention on it, on what's going on inside you. And then self-observation, we've talked about, you know, the ability to observe one's self and in all of our bodies, you know, observe mental body, observe the vital body, observe your emotional body, observe your mental body, observe your universal body. And these are very important, you know, things to do if you want to be energy healthy.
So the six internal senses are attention, intention, visualization, self-talk, self-sensing, and self-observation.
Yes.
Great. I like
you
that.
Get an A. You're a good student.
Oh, good. Yeah, and it really helps when you start realizing to start paying attention, being aware, and where are you focusing your attention? What are you intending to happen? You know, putting your focus and your visualization on things that bring your energy up, you know, monitoring your self-talk, because I agree with you. Many times we're beating ourselves up, or we're digging ourselves into a, energy hole.
Yeah.
With self-talk. Now, what's the difference between self-sensing and self-observation?
Well, when you're self-sensing, you're actually feeling, sensing what's going on inside of you. Whereas self-observation, you're a little bit more detached. You're like the detached detective. You know, you're observing, you're witnessing, you're bearing witness. And it kind of, you know, mirrors what we were talking about earlier about, you know, director's mode, being the director versus being the actor, you know, being in it versus being able to, you know, observe it. And we don't want to, you know, eliminate any of these channels, but we do want to have as many of them open and functioning as possible. So it's not like director's mode is better than actor's mode, or, you know, self-observing is better than self-sensing. Not at all. It's just that we need to have, you know, as many channels open and available as possible.
Great. Well, back to the brain and the what you were talking about in the mental body, you said that the brain is an antenna.
Yeah.
I was interested in that. Can you extrapolate on that a little bit? How is the brain an antenna?
Well, yes. Our brains just simply don't work the way that we have been told they do. You know, it's not about the gray matter in your head. I mean, you know, for the longest time they thought that you know, well, all the other cells in your body replenish and renew except for the brain, you know, and you don't grow any new brain cells. And it's like, oh, wow, well, that's really interesting. Well, what do we know now? I shouldn't say it's not true, but it's a very limited way of understanding the brain, because what we know now is it doesn't really matter that your brain is growing or producing cells. It's a matter of the interconnectedness of the neurons, you know? I mean, if brains had to do with size, you know, elephants would be the most intelligent thing on the planet. And, you know, they're not, which is not to, you know, mm-hmm. say anything bad about elephants, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So our brain doesn't, it functions as an antenna. And it might be difficult to grasp, but we don't so much create thoughts, we receive them. We receive thoughts through the antenna of our brain. And which kind of gets us into the whole little discussion and piece from the book about thought forms and how they work and how they travel, and they actually do travel through, you know, time space, and they may reach their destination or they may not. And a lot of that has to do with the power of our ability to concentrate, which is the hallmark of a healthy mental body, the power of concentration, the ability to hold a focus. So, because our brain is more antenna-like, we're able to send and receive these thought forms. And that's a pretty important function of the brain.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the key steps then to maintaining a healthy mental body?
Well, one of the most important things is to develop your capacity to hold a focus, to concentrate, you know. And it's not so much about, and this is particularly a challenge now, because as we, you know, are deeply stepping into the information age here, you know, there's so much to focus on, and it changes constantly, and, you know, attention span is shrinking by the moment. And most of us, you know, lose our ability to concentrate. I mean, you could even think of it as a muscle. If you don't exercise it, you know, it's going to atrophy. And so it's important to practice holding a focus, you know, focusing on something and going into it and being able to really concentrate on it. And it's also why, you know, so much of the, in fact, I dare say all, but I don't know about all the research, but the vast majority of research on the power of intention and so forth, it's always done using people who have been long-term meditators. Because if somebody, you know, has been meditating for a very long time, they have disciplined their mental body to be able to hold a focus. And when you do that, you can really, you know, amp up the potency of your antenna, so to speak, of your, you know, mental body.
Right. That was what came to me when you said about that. I was like, oh, like counting breaths or doing some kind of meditation where you just keep your focus, and when your mind wanders, just keep right back to the object of meditation. So really, meditation is a great way to keep a healthy mental body.
It is, and I'm glad that you mentioned, you know, this idea of holding a focus, and if your thought wanders, bring it back, because there are different kinds of meditation, you know, in fact, many different kinds, but they tend to fall into either being concentrative kinds of meditation or expansive kinds of meditation. The expansive being where you just kind of throw your antenna up and let whatever come in. And in the concentrative kinds of meditation, you are really trying to hold a focus and you know, discipline your mental body so that if an unwanted thought comes in, that you can choose not to have it there. And so I'm in this instance, more of an advocate for the concentrative kind of meditation.
Right.
Because that's what will help the mental body, you know, to be able to hold a focus.
Mm-hmm. Great. Or there's some ways in kinesiology that you work with the mental body, or ones that we other kinesiologists tend to use. I would imagine like things where you're working with the beliefs would be.
Yes.
Finding that.
Looking for, you know, core limiting beliefs. For one, in muscle testing or energy kinesiology, you can just test to find out, okay, what's going on? Is it best understood on, you know, the emotional body or in the mental body and so forth? And, of course, if the emotional body is indicated, you can go into it and ask, you know, okay, we're looking for a specific emotion here. We're looking for, you know, some kind of situation. If it's the mental body, you know, what you want to look for would be things like decisions that have been made, conclusions, you know, a conclusion that a person may have come to, some kind of conviction, some kind of, you know, vow type of thing. And, you know, sometimes when we live our lives, you know, we get a strong conviction about something, or we have an experience, oh, well, that person hurt me, so I have decided I will never, you know, love again, or whatever it is. And then we forget about it. Well, you know, if we make a decision like that with some volition behind it, it can have some staying power. And so one of the beautiful uses of kinesiology, you know, energy testing, is to try to find, you know, oh, did that person, you know, make a decision like that and they kind of forgot about it? And do we need to revisit that? Do we need to revise that condition or to cancel it or, you know, whatever? So those would be some examples of how to work on the mental level. You also want to look for repetitive thought forms. That's another distortion of the mental body.
I see. Very good. So there's some great approaches and skills from kinesiology, but that just the fact that we're looking and discerning which body is where the priorities lie that we need to clear. And I also
yes.
liked how you talked about the step down. So if people are having disturbances in their emotional body, look up to the mental body, like those decisions, those beliefs
yes.
that keep people stuck in a certain emotional pattern.
Yes, and, you know, the mental body has great potency. I mean, you know, a perfect example of this is, you know, we go to sleep, we have a dream. You know, maybe I dream that I'm being chased by a tiger. Well, I wake up and I'm, you know, I'm panting and sweating and, you know, I'm like out of breath. And my physical body is responding, my emotional body is fear-filled, and all of this is happening even though it was just a dream.
Mm-hmm.
The event only happened in my mind.
Awesome.
So, but the other bodies have to follow the lower frequency bodies. So the mental body is of a higher calibration than the emotional or the vital physical.
Mm-hmm.
So they end up following.
Yeah, got it. So tell us about the universal body. What is that?
Oh, well, how much time do you have?
We only got 3 hours left.
Only three hours?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll perhaps make a little dent. Well, the universal body is, you know, many people would simply call it the spiritual body. But when I, you know, wrote the book, I really wanted to stay away from any, you know, kind of religious-sounding terminology because these energies are not something that you either believe in or you don't believe in. They simply exist. I mean, they just are.
Yeah,
and so I was trying to find language that was as neutral as possible, you know, to talk about these things. So I call the spiritual body the universal body. And it basically, you know, it has several functions, you know, just like the domain of the vital body is vitality, and the domain of the emotional body is feelings, and the domain of the mental body is thoughts. Well, the domain of the universal body is consciousness. And so it's really all about consciousness for the universal body. And that is its primary function, is to bring consciousness to us and, you know, to our other bodies and so forth. And that is its function. And consciousness has some very special properties to it that make it, you know, very high powered. It's an extremely high powered, fast frequency energy, this energy of consciousness. And as such, consciousness itself has healing qualities, has healing properties, healing potential automatically. You know, so when you bring something into your conscious awareness, you know, it's the start of a healing process. Healing happens right then and there. Mm-hmm. Consciousness also, some of its other special properties are that, as far as we know, consciousness is limitless. You know, it has no boundaries. It is, you know, pure potentiality. It's infinite. And consciousness is also inherently unitive. One of the qualities of it is that it connects, it unites, it brings things together, you know, it allows you to connect the dots of your experience, so mm-hmm. to speak. So that's a little bit about the universal body. And, you know, from the perspective of energy health, it's not about altered states of consciousness. It is about the expansion of consciousness. Mm. And that's an important point.
Well, you talk about epigenetics and what
yeah.
Deepak Chopra said, that different consciousnesses have different metabolisms.
Yes.
Can you speak about that?
Yes, isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, one of the pieces of research from which this idea derived was some of the research that was done on people with multiple personality disorder, or what used to be called, you know, schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. And what they found was that when a person was displaying, you know, one of their personalities, that individual could have, you know, diabetes, and, you know, that individual could be displaying, you know, nearsightedness, and, you know, maybe have blue eyes.
Right.
And then when they shifted into a different personality, the very same individual could have no diabetes, perfect eyesight, and, you know, hazel eyes or whatever. And, you know, what does that tell you? you know, it tells us that our physical body is just a manifestation of, you know, these different states of consciousness. So what does a person with multiple personality disorder do? They shift into a completely different state of consciousness. You know, all of their bodies are just going into a different state of consciousness, and lo and behold, it can actually play out and show up on the physical realm with these very different, you know, symptomologies. So that's very, very fascinating. And that's what, you know, my understanding of Chopra's comment, that different consciousnesses have different biologies.
I understand. I actually had that experience once. I was at a Tony Robbins event. I was one of the trainers there, and I had a carpal tunnel where my wrist was really sore. And they got to the board-breaking part of the the day, and I thought, well, there's no way could I even attempt to break a board because I have carpal tunnel syndrome, and I can't even think about that. And I was kind of in a state, got a low-level consciousness, you know, got a fear and all that. Well, I saw this woman probably in her 60s who was in a wheelchair break a board, and I go, wait a minute. If she can do it, I can do it. So I just shifted my consciousness, broke the board, and I had no pain from there on out in my wrist.
That is really awesome. That is a great example of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And that experience is available to all of us. You know, if we shift in to these, you know, to a higher frequency state of consciousness, we can do many things, many, many things.
Spontaneous healing kind of is, isn't it? Like,
yep.
I know you've worked with Bruce Lipton. Wasn't
yeah.
there something about his latest book had something about that?
Spontaneous
healing or something, because I know
yeah.
he talks a lot about the mental body, you know, with beliefs, like biology of belief.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, that's really the biology of belief and epigenetics. The whole idea behind it is that our physicality is a manifestation of our consciousness, right down to the level of genetics, you know. So much of what we've been taught about how, you know, genes operate just isn't really the whole story, you know. I mean, Bruce Lipton is fond of saying that the whole, you know, Human Genome Project is like, you know, trying to compile the equivalent of the New York City telephone directory without ever having invented the telephone. So it's like, you know, they're mapping out all of these, you know, gene combinations, but they don't understand what's driving it. Mm-hmm. And they really don't. Because what's driving it is not on the physical level. What's driving it is on the level of consciousness.
Great. Can you talk more about David Hawkins' work and how that ties into the universal body? Because I know you mentioned that in the book.
Yes. Well, you know, we touched on this a little earlier, and one of the things, you know, one of the beautiful gifts that Dr. David Hawkins gave was these calibrations of these different states of being, you know, in his whole map of consciousness. And he basically calibrated all of these, you know, different modes. And the way that it connects with the universal body is that there are, you know, higher frequency states of consciousness and lower frequency states of consciousness. And I should clarify here that, you know, I don't mean to be saying, oh, higher is always good and low is bad. I mean, it's not so much like that. It's kind of like talking about high C versus low C on a musical scale. Mm-hmm. It just gives us a way to differentiate. But there are, you know, higher frequency states of consciousness like, you know, peace and love and acceptance and forgiveness and, you know, things like that, that impact our energy system in particular ways that are very different from, you know, lower frequency states of consciousness like, you know, blame and, you know, apathy or anxiety or, you know, things like that. Even pride. Hawkins says that pride is a lower frequency state of consciousness. Sometimes that can be hard to get our head around because, you know,
mm-hmm.
Americans can be very focused on pride.
Well, it's more
as a good
ego.
Thing.
I think of pride in that sense
yes.
of more ego pride where it separates you from people. And I also see how resentment, when somebody holds resentment, how detrimental that is to their health and their energy body. Whereas when they feel forgiveness, it can totally transform their health and
yes.
clear up major health challenges.
Yeah. I mean, it's reminds me of another saying that, you know, the fallacy is in terms of holding a grudge. You know, we sometimes hold a grudge or have resentment against someone and, you know, we think that we're actually, you know, getting back at the other person when all we're doing is hurting ourselves. You know?
Yeah, I heard it described as holding resentment is like taking poison yourself and then hoping that the other person will die.
Right. That makes it very vivid.
Yeah, and I think it was Michael Beckwith I heard the other day was talking about that, you know, I think
That's
he called it complaining. He said complaining is like talking to the devil. because it, you know, just burns your energy bodies, you know, toxic acids.
I like that.
Yeah. How about in terms of the healthy energy body then, or universal body particularly, how do we keep a healthy universal body?
Well, one of the best things that you can do in a word is to become mindful. And, it, you know, what I mean by that is to become conscious, to bring consciousness to, well, hopefully to everything that you do, everything that you do, everything that you say, every action that you take. I mean, really, the goal is to have a continuity of consciousness so that all of your bodies are, you know, permeated by this energy of consciousness, to have that be, you know, more of the glue that's holding everything together. Because with consciousness comes, as I mentioned, healing. With consciousness comes unity. With consciousness comes, you know, understanding. With consciousness comes choice, freedom of choice. You know, if one is consciously choosing something, that's very different than being, you know, on autopilot or reactive or whatever. So one of the best and easiest things that we can do is to become, you know, mindful or conscious of, you know, all of the aspects of us, what we say, what we think, you know, how we feel, and so forth.
Yes, very good. Just really be conscious and come from those higher planes of consciousness that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Love, peace, joy, acceptance. I remember a guy I met once, he was paralyzed from the neck down, and he was just totally blissful. And he said that when he wakes up every morning, his question, where he puts his focus, is, where am I going to find joy today? You know,
nice.
He transcended all his pain and misery that he could have lived in, you know, from an accident where he was a vital, healthy person. In a diving accident, he's paralyzed from the neck down. He says, well, I'm going to put my attention and intention, like you talked about, those internal forces and that self-talk, on focusing on where I'm going to find joy, so that higher plane of consciousness. And he was just blissed out. In fact, he had a bumper sticker he was selling. He said, instead of life's a bitch and then you die, he said, life's a beach and then you ascend.
Well, that about sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah. So speaking of beach, we got on that topic. Nice segue. I know we talked about planning a program that we can have people come to Hawaii and experience a whole week of studying and practicing all these disciplines from the endless energy. Can you talk to us a little bit about that coming up?
Yes, here? Well, and you could talk about it too, John, because, you know, you are an integral part of this. But
yes.
So, yes, John and I are planning Endless Energy in Paradise for the first week in May, which is May 2nd through the 8th. And it's going to be on the Big Island, and it will be an exploration of the energy bodies, and we're going to focus, you know, roughly one, you know, the equivalent of one full day per body, and really go into this, you know, with exercises and experiential, you know, hands-on things. And then, of course, because we're going to be in paradise, well, there'll be all kinds of other, you know, things happening as well, with, you know, the ocean and the beach and the sun and the volcano and, you know, all kinds of things.
Swimming with dolphins.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, we'll be swimming with dolphins. There's all kinds of ocean sports. We'll be snorkeling. We can possibly go up to the top of Mauna Kea, which is the highest mountain on any island in the world, where the world's largest observatories are, and just spectacular experience. It'd be a life-changing.
And play with the telescopes. I've done that. It is incredible to be able to see with those extended eyes into the heavens. It's incredible. It's,
yeah.
That in itself is like a life-altering experience.
Yeah. Yes, it's just going to be tremendous. So if anyone wants to find out more details on this, we're going to be offering a special $500 discount for anyone that enrolls particularly in the next 2 months. So if you'd like to find out about it, you can send an email to Deborah. Why don't you give your email address out as well as your website?
Okay, the website is www.energyhealthy.com, and you can email me at Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, at energyhealthy.com.
Great, and if any of you need to connect with me, it's John M., as in McGuire, at kinesiologyinstitute.com, and we'll be posting more details on that event in just probably in a few days. I've got all the pictures from the ocean sports, and I'm going to be flying to Hawaii in less than 2 weeks, and we're going to be doing some possible video and more showing you where you're going to be. It's going to be at a 5-star resort, beachfront, spectacular view of the beach and the mountains, and in fact, you can see Maui. I can wave to you from where we're going to be at over in Maui because we can see Haleakala, 5 actual mountains you can see from this spot.
How beautiful.
Yeah, it's just tremendous location. Good. I'd like to hear a little bit about your program. You mentioned
yes.
Inner Clarity. Can you tell us a little bit about that program?
Yes, I do. I mean, you know, much of what's in the book was kind of inspired by and informed by my practice, which is called Inner Clarity. And, you know, it's all about, you know, understanding and working with these energy bodies and using the feedback of the kinesiology, you know, energy testing, to identify, you know, distortions or imbalances in these energy bodies. And so I am offering an inner clarity experience, which is, you know, an experiential inner clarity workshop on February 26th and 27th, where we're going to be doing a big fat balance. We will be, you know, going in depth and exploring and cleaning and identifying, you know, any kinds of distortions in these bodies and then transforming that and them. And then I'm also offering right after that an inner clarity training. So that consists of the muscle testing 101, or which I'm in the process of renaming energy testing 101, which is a 1 day, and then the next is a 2 day module called energy basics, and then the final module is another 2 day, and it's called the energy rays. And people can take, you know, either one or two or all three of them or all four or whatever, so they're kind of put in little bite-sized pieces.
Great.
So you can pick and choose.
They can find out more about that then on your website?
Yes.
And that website address one more time, please.
Energyhealthy.com.
Energyhealthy.com.
Yes.
Great. And for, I know Ellen out there, you had a question related to some things with chiropractors. So, Ellen, you can email me at johnm@kinesiologyinstitute.com, and I can ask that question for you. So one person had a question here, Lawrence, I believe in Berkeley. He said, understanding energy health to be a nexus of important elements, what would you say tops that list?
Wow. You know, that's a really, really good question, and I hope I'm not going to disappoint Lawrence with my answer, but the answer is it depends, and that's because we are all different. And, you know, it is really very unique and specific to the individual because with so many, you know, energy bodies and with so many, you know, possibilities for imbalance, it, you know, I would have to know a little bit more, like, are we talking about, who are we talking about and what's going on with them in order to answer that? And I know that that's not a very satisfying answer, but it is the truth.
Well, that's the beauty of kinesiology, because you can find out what is the most important element for this individual through,
exactly,
through muscle monitoring or muscle
testing. Yeah, and it's not, you know, it's not one size fits all.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in many approaches it tends to be, not the least of which is conventional Western medicine. You know, it's supposed to be one size fits all. Well, it doesn't work, you know, because we are all different and we're at different places in our journeys, you know, on our path. And so what worked for me, you know, a week ago, a month ago, a year ago, might not work for me now and might not work for the person next to me. And there's so many things that can impact it, which is why, as you said, you know, being able to use this feedback, this beautiful, powerful feedback indicator of the kinesiological testing, it just helps so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really gets to the root cause of what's going on in that person.
Yes.
Because for one person, you know, it could be disturbances in their mental body, and another one more in their emotional body, and another one more in their vital body, and the food they're eating, and,
yes,
you know, there's all these things interacting.
I should say, just to honor Lawrence and his question, if I absolutely had to say, you know, if I absolutely had to say a response, I would say the universal body. Because when it comes right down to it, you know, that's the primary mover and shaker, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggie.
Yeah. That's the one overall.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the mother load.
Yeah, great. Well, if you wouldn't mind having a possible few more minutes, I can open up the lines and see if there's any questions out there.
Sure.
Okay. Hold on. Okay, does anyone have a question for Deborah? Just say your name and where you're calling in from and your question.
Evelyn Malders from British Columbia, Canada.
Great, Evelyn.
The vital energy or the vital body that she talks about, she said it had 3 or 4 bands in it. What were they?
The components or aspects of the vital body, is that the question?
Yes.
Okay. So yes, I'm happy to speak to that. I'm mentioning like the 3 big ones, but there's more than this. But the 3 big ones are the chakra system.
Okay.
You know, which consists of the 7 major chakras. We also have 21 minor chakras, and we have 49 little mini chakras.
Yeah.
So there's that system, and then there is the meridian system with the 14 major meridians and then several hundred, you know, minor meridians. And then the 3rd piece is the nadis, which are the tiny little energy capillaries, all of which, you know, these 3 aspects form this energy distribution system that, you know, the conglomerate of which I refer to as the vital body.
Your breakdown is just different than I was familiar with, you know, working from the auric field down. So I was just trying to put everything in a box, you know.
Yeah. So the aura is actually the combined radiatory effect that is produced by the combination of the energy bodies. So the aura is a little bit bigger, you know, superset, the vital body being a subset of that. But the aura actually is the radiatory effect of these energy bodies.
So
I don't know if that helps, but that's 2 cents worth. Sorry, John, what was that?
Yeah, if I understand correctly, in the auric bodies, do you have a layer that is the mental body in the auric field and an aura that is the emotional body in the auric field as well as the layer that's the vital body in the universal? Is it like all of them combined and there's layers within the aura that's each of those?
Yes. In a way, yes. But the distinction that I'm attempting to make here is that there are the bodies, and then the bodies radiate. They radiate energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the aura refers to that radiation effect. So when you are, you know, reading an aura or, you know, working with an aura, you are working with the radiation, the radiatory effect of these bodies. So it's a conglomerate kind of thing that refers to kind of like a halo effect, you could say. Aura comes from the Latin word aurum. It means light or dress of light.
So your breakdown is the physical body, the vital body, the emotional body, mental body, and universal body.
Yes.
Are there subsections of any of those?
Yes, there are.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, now I'm a little bit with you. Okay, thank you.
Okay, yes, there are. And you know, in the book, I wanted to keep it, you know, simple, following the KISS rule, you know, keep it simple, sweetheart, because my intent in writing it was to make this information available to as many people as possible.
Good job.
Thank you very much. And if I were writing a practitioner's manual, I would go way into it. In fact,
and when's that coming out?
I was going to say maybe that's going to be the next one, and I can see the need for it.
Absolutely.
So I can see the need for it. So
when you come to Hawaii, we can get into it there, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Sounds great, John.
Dive in
Thank
deep.
You.
Sure. Good. Thanks for that question. Any other questions out there? Going once, going twice. Let me just check if we have any more from the web, on the webcast. No, I think we're good. So it's been wonderful having you on this fabulous, exciting interview. It's just been enlightening. And again, anyone out there, you got to get this book because it's just the best.
Well, thank you, John. And it's just been so much fun having this time with you. And I so appreciate, you know, your questions and, like I said, just your support of the book and how much you have really digested the information. That's an honor. Thank you.
You're welcome. And tell us one more time, for those out there that haven't picked up the book yet, how they can get it at the special holiday discount.
Thank you for reminding me of that. Yes, holiday special discount, over 20% off. Endless Energy is reduced from $18.95 down to $14-something. I wish I could remember. It's like $14. Yeah, something like that. And you can get that by going to my website, energyhealthy.com, and just click on the link that says purchase the book, and it will take you to the website, and then you type in the promo code Energy Health, all one word, Energy Health, and you will get your discount.
Fantastic. Great. Well, again, it's been a pleasure having you on. Looking forward to seeing you in Hawaii, and keep us posted on what you're doing.
I will. Thank you so much, John.
It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. Aloha from Maui.
All right. Aloha. Goodbye, everyone, and God bless.